I want to give you someone who's become a friend of a lot of people in New York City. He's a go-to guy when we want information about travel. He's a go-to guy when it comes to dog stuff. He's a go-to guy when it comes to just plain old advice. He's worked with the PASS Coalition, that's the Pedestrians for Accessible and Safe Streets, and he's worked with a lot of other people. He brings a balanced knowledge of O&M to the business and to the discussion. So I'd like to give you, for a shorter time than he was scheduled, I hope, Lucas, please, I'd like to give you Lucas Frank. Thank you.
My gosh, thank you very much. Okay, it's been great being here. Thank you so much. Goodbye. No.
A little more than that.
A little more than that. Okay. I think many of you know that I work for the Seeing Eye, and I think many of you know in history that the Seeing Eye started in 1929, and the first person to get a dog, and one of the founders of the Seeing Eye was a fellow named Morris Frank. And Morris Frank got off the boat from Switzerland with Buddy, his first dog, in 1928, and made an enormous splash in our archives, and we have tremendous archives. There is the documentation of his arrival in New York, and the splash he made was kind of like Neil Armstrong landing on the moon. You know, it was just amazing coverage. But the splash he made and what he was able to do was dependent upon something, and I'm not talking about Buddy. The first traffic light was invented, or patented in any case, by an African-American traffic engineer from Cleveland named Mason Garrett, I think. And there were some traffic lights earlier than that. There was one that was powered by gas in London, which worked really well until it blew up. So Mr. Garrett patented that traffic light. Everybody thought it was a good idea. And by the time Morris Frank landed in New York, there were traffic lights all up and down Manhattan Island. And there had to be because of the traffic. That's why traffic lights were invented, need. And if Morris Frank had gotten off that boat 10 years earlier, those traffic lights wouldn't have been there. His ability to travel and to make the kind of impression he did and to have the impact that he did would have been severely reduced, made much more difficult. Those traffic lights made travel easy for blind people. Remember, at that time, there was no mobility or anything like that, but it didn't take that much of a trick to figure out that, by gosh, if these things are going with pulses, left to right's going, when that stops, the stuff going our way goes. People figured that out. And they used it. And that was made possible by the existence of traffic lights at all those corners. You see what I mean? If he had gotten off the boat 10 years earlier, those lights wouldn't have been there. And the main point of this talk is that infrastructure influences and sometimes makes possible independence. And changes in infrastructure have an impact on independence. And so monitoring those changes and being active in discussing those changes and being aware of them is critical. And we are in a deteriorating pedestrian environment right now. Things are spinning down in bad ways. And the first thing that really made me aware of this was the changes in signalization timing at intersections. You know, when I grew up in New York City, and at that time everything just changed, just like it did when Morris Frank got off the boat. 30 seconds this way, 30 seconds that way. Then at a certain point, I began to run in, because my job for the Seeing Eye was national and I had to travel around the country and work with folks all over the place, I began to run into intersections that I felt were, I couldn't figure out. I couldn't figure out why the lights were changing, when they were changing, and why they were changing for short periods of time. And And I was working with people with dogs from the school, and I'd have to say, I don't understand what's going on here. I don't think you can cross here all the time. And that's not my philosophy. I don't come from there. I don't come from a place where I'm comfortable telling people you shouldn't do something. I come from a place where you tell people, yeah, you can do that. You can figure that out. You can do that. It's manageable. And so to be in a position where I couldn't do that made me very uncomfortable. But I thought they were one-offs. And then one day in Atlanta in 1995, I hit three intersections in a row with three different people. And I went, uh-oh, there's something big going on here. And I started to investigate the field of traffic engineering and why those things were happening, and realized that what was happening was that computers were hitting the street. That whereas before it was simple gears changing lights, now it was computers with all the intelligence and fluidity that implies, and that all of a sudden access to street crossing information and timing was becoming something that you couldn't just readily observe because it was happening at the level of bits and bytes inside a computer inside a controller cabinet on a corner. And so all of a sudden it became necessary to become an advocate for access to the information that was changing those lights. And that's why I became an activist in the field of accessible pedestrian signals and worked hard on writing language that permitted them and created sort of standards for them. So we end up with a national standard for accessible pedestrian signals so that a blind person coming to an unfamiliar intersection has an interface that they can understand because it's similar to one that they encountered in their neighborhood. Imagine if you had traffic lights where in Iowa you had purple and red, but in New York you had red and green, and in Ohio you had pink and blue. You know, for red, you know, it would just, everybody goes stark raving crazy. You have to have national standards, and the same was true for accessibility. So that's been an area of my focus, and we've come a long, long way in that area. Initially, to be honest, with opposition from the National Federation of the Blind, but I think over the years, the experience of blind pedestrians on the streets followed my experience on those street corners. In Atlanta, and people began to realize that the infrastructure on the street was changing and there was a need for this type of advocacy. And I think we've made some very significant changes in that direction. One of the things that I always have to do, and Carl, give me a 5 minute or something, you know, so I know where I am in my time.
You got it right now.
Okay. It's important to say that if you have a pedestrian push button and you're crossing a major roadway, you better use it. Okay? Because what's happening is you're letting the computer that runs the intersection know that you're there. And so when you push that button, you're saying, I need time for a pedestrian to cross that street as opposed to a car. And typically, the walk sign will come on after you push that button, when it comes up in the cycle. It won't happen immediately, but when it comes on, the walk sign will come on typically for 7 seconds, okay? That does not mean you have 7 seconds to cross the street. That's the appetizer. 7 seconds is government regulation that says you get a walk indication for 7 seconds. But the important thing to remember is that once the flashing don't walk comes on, that flashing don't walk is based on how wide the street is. So, for example, I'm going to use a slightly outdated figure because it's easier for me, but they calculate a walking speed of 4 feet per second. Everybody there? Okay. If you had an 80-foot wide street, which might be like 6-7 lanes in a parking lane, after the 7 seconds of walk, it will start flashing don't walk, and it will flash don't walk for 20 seconds. 20 seconds is 4 feet feet per second divided into 80 feet. 80 feet is feet is the width of the street. Everybody clear on that? So you'll get 20 seconds of flashing don't walk, okay, followed by a few seconds of, and that's the main course, followed by a few seconds of all red as the light changes back, and that's the dessert. You don't want to be in the street for dessert, okay? But if you walk at a good average speed, you have plenty of time to get across that street. If you had a 40-foot wide street, this is a test. Let's check your math skills. If you had a 40-foot wide street, How long would the flashing don't walk be? 10 seconds. Exactly right. Okay? So it varies depending upon the width of the street. And that's what you have to know. And that's for crossing major streets. And that's why you have to push the button. Because if it was just a car, they'd only get like 17. Two other things I want to mention quickly. One is roundabouts and changes in geometry at street corners. That's called intersection geometry. They're coming in large numbers. They are going to change the infrastructure in a radical way, but you're not going to have those nice 90-degree corners anymore. They're going to be circular. And that's happening because they are very safe for drivers. They save lives and injuries, but they create challenges for people who are blind or visually impaired because there is no pulse of traffic changing. It doesn't change every 30 seconds. There's always something moving. And so you have to interpret that well. There's a lot of work going on to make sure these remain accessible. The answers appear to be raised crosswalks, which force cars to yield and slow down, and maybe some type of sound maker that will let you know that there's a car there yielding. But this is a really active moment in the development of these intersections. It's happening nationally. It's happening in a very, very big way in New York State. State intersection design considerations must include consideration of roundabouts. So they're coming. The other thing I want to talk about for just a second is quiet car issue. The quiet car issue, you know, this is why I'm saying that the pedestrian environment for people who are blind and visually impaired is deteriorating. Between all of these things, changes in signalization, oncoming roundabouts, quiet cars, things are getting harder out there. And the quiet car issue, there is a regulation coming saying that there has to be a sound in quiet cars, but the latest development is that that regulation will not come into effect until 2018. So, and that it will take, there'll be like a 3-year grandfather period to make it happen, so in effect 2020 or 2021 before you really see the impact of that. The one thing that's working in our favor there is lower gas prices, because that's going to slow the development and sale of large numbers of electric vehicles. So keep your fingers crossed that the gas prices stay low. So I think I'm going to end there, because I think Carl's going to, I'm going to get kicked out in a minute anyway, so I think I'll go with grace. Thank you very much for the time. Keep up the good work. Keep traveling. Be careful. You know, capability trumps all. Desire and will and spirit trumps all. Keep going. All right.
Thank you.
See you later.
Thank you. Thank you, Lucas. One quick draw prize. Let's go.